or he felt Lumaya's shock in the force, then squeezing it twice more before he heard her body hit the floor. And suddenly, Mara was screaming at him from across the cantina, flooding the force with alarm. Stop firing! You can't kill her! Luke looked back to Lumaya and thought he had done a pretty good job of it. She was lying at the foot of the clackball table with three different columns of blaster smoke rising from her chest, her cybernetic life support girdle sparking and sizzling with short circuits. Her light whip lay on the floor nearby, where she had dropped it when he blasted her. His own lightsaber lay a few meters beyond, where it had landed when she used the whip to disarm him. Luke used the force to summon both weapons to him, then stood and went to check on her. To his surprise, Lumaya's eyes were focused and alert, and horribly bugged out with pain. As soon as she saw him, it crinkled at the corners, as though she were smiling. That tiny act made his spine ache with danger sense, but he tried not to let that show when he spoke.
"Mara's coming," he gasped. "She'll try to save you."
"Maybe not." Mara came up behind him and took one look at Lumaya, then said, "In fact, not a chance." She grabbed Luke and tried to pull him away, but still fighting his pain, he pulled back and remained where he was.
"Mara, we can't leave her."
"Yes, Luke, we can." Mara leaned down and pulled open Lumaya's robe, revealing, aside from blaster wounds and life support girdle, a black combat vest with a sensor pad over the heart. The diodes were blinking weakly and erratically. "In fact, I think we better run."
Aboard the Millennium Falcon, near Migos, a moon in orbit around planet Hapes.
With a swarm of pincer-winged Mytils nibbling at the forward shields and a Nova-class battlecruiser chewing on the stern, Leia was jerking the pilot's yoke around at random, just trusting to the Force and blind luck to get the Falcon through the storm of enemy fire. Golden shimmers of dispersal energy began to appear a few meters ahead, a sign that the Falcon's shields were overloading. Leia ignored the flashing maelstrom long enough to glance at the co-pilot's seat, where Han sat hunched over a disassembled shield adjustment panel. C-3PO stood next to him, trying to hold the panel steady against the control board while Han worked.
"How are those shield repairs coming?"
"Even I can't splice a moving target," Han complained. "Hold still, 3PO!
"It's not my fault. Holding still is quite impossible while Princess Leia continues to evade enemy fire. The Falcon's inertial compensators are simply inadequate for this kind of maneuvering."
Leia swung wide to avoid a flight of concussion missiles. The Falcon shuddered as the Nogri operating the cannon turrets cut loose with the quad cannons. The Mytil that had launched the attack erupted into a boiling sphere of flame.
"Perhaps we wouldn't need to evade so wildly if Princess Leia were to travel in a direction opposite the enemy."
"I can't, 3PO, Leia said. At the moment, she was flying away from the usurpers at a right angle,
doing her best to keep the Falcon pointed toward the growing yellow crescent of Hape's third moon, Migos.
"We'll get caught in the crossfire."
"Crossfire? Between whom? I didn't see a friendly fleet exit hyperspace behind us."
"It will be here," Leia said.
"Sure, any day now," Han added.
A turbo laser strike erupted close to port, throwing the Falcon sideways and slamming C-3PO into the back of Leia's seat. The droid bounced off and crashed to the deck, leaving a tangle of broken wires sparking in an empty control board socket.
"Oh, dear. I seem to have pulled the shield adjustment panel away from the control board. Now it's going to take Captain Solo twice as long to make repairs. Oh! Oh, the pain of it!"
"Forget it, 3PO.
The fusing pen gave a soft snap as Han deactivated it.
"We never had a chance."
Leia put one hand on the throttles.
"Do you see any reason I shouldn't push the engines hard?"
"You mean aside from the leaking coolant line and the number 4 vector plate getting sticky?"
"Yeah."
Leia almost took her hand off the throttles. She hadn't noticed the sticky vector plate.
"I mean aside from those two problems."
"Well then, no, I don't."
Han sounded a little more hopeful, as though taking a desperate gamble with their lives on the line was all he ever needed to cheer him up.
"Let her rip, sweetheart."
Leia pointed the Falcon's nose straight toward the dark interior of the crescent moon, then pushed the throttles past the overload stops and kept pushing until they would go no farther. She felt herself sink in her seat as the vessel's acceleration tested the already overburdened inertial compensators.
and they shot forward into the swarm of Mytales that had been harassing them. As the Falcon careened through their midst, the starfighters took close-range snapshots, and space exploded into a wall of energy blossoms. The Nogri answered with the quad cannons, taking out 4 starfighters in half as many seconds. Then the Falcon was through the formation, with nothing but the crater-pocked sickle of Migos swelling rapidly in the forward canopy. The Mytales launched a desperate volley of concussion missiles and turned to give chase, placing themselves between the Falcon and the Nova Cruiser, exactly as Leia had hoped they would. Han activated the decoy launchers, and the Nogri kept the quad cannons chugging, and the missiles started to vanish from the tactical display, 2 and 3 at a time. Fearful of hitting her own starfighters, the Nova quieted her turbolasers, and there was a moment of relative peace as the Mytales struggled to bring themselves back into cannon range and reacquire target locks. Leia kept their nose pointed straight ahead, adding gravitational pull to the ship's acceleration, and the gap between the Falcon and Migos began to close more quickly than the one between the Falcon and the Mytales.
Trying the old solo slingshot?
Han asked. A partial, anyway, Leia said. Seems like a good time to learn it.
Sure, why not?
Han replied.
You do know that it's a pretty tricky maneuver at full acceleration, right?
Leia nodded. I thought it might be.
And if that vector plate sticks at the wrong time, you know the crater we drill is going to be about 3 kilometers deep.
I hadn't actually done the calculations, Leia admitted. A cold prickle ran down Leia's spine. She glanced at the tactical display and saw that the Mytales were swinging hard to port, trying to open a clear firing lane for the Nova. She swung the yoke in the same direction, trying to keep the starfighters behind them and banking toward the center of the moon, in the wrong direction for the slingshot maneuver.
Honey?
Han's voice was nervous and high.
That's...
A boiling cloud of brilliance erupted to starboard, engulfing the position they had just abandoned.
A nice save, Han admitted. Probably would have done the same thing myself.
They started to climb when space ahead broke into crooked snakes of iridescence. The proximity alarm blared to life, and the viewport was suddenly packed with blue halos, all growing steadily larger. What the blazes? Leia gasped.
I think your fleet showed up, Han said, and in the wrong place.
Leia glanced down and found her tactical display growing more crowded by the moment. Frigates, cruisers, and star destroyers were reverting from hyperspace at the rate of 2 or 3 per second, all pouring starfighters into space and accelerating toward Migos at full power. The name Admiral Akbar appeared under a star destroyer at the rear of the formation. And suddenly, Leia understood why it had taken the Alliance so long to attack. That's Boatu.
Figures, Han grumbled. What Boatu makes a straightforward attack when he can try something tricky, like coming out from behind a moon instead?
Well, at least they cared enough to send the best. Leia considered reducing the throttles, but by then they were already crossing between Migos and Hapes, and a full view of the battle convinced her they would want all the velocity they could achieve. Space ahead was one big sheet of turbolaser fire, dotted by crimson knots of energy and tiny slivers of distant ships jetting flame, vapor, and lives. As the Falcon left the moon behind, a tightly packed screen of battle dragons, looking like stacked dashes at this distance, began to appear inside the conflagration. They were clustered in front of 2 thumb-sized eggs, slowly falling back toward Hapes and putting up such a wall of fire that the Corellian dreadnoughts had been forced to abandon their penetration tactic and simply try to punch it out from short range. Looks like Tenelka trusted us.
Yeah, I just hope it didn't get her killed, Han said. Boatu took too much time getting here. There are a lot of broken ships floating around out there.
Seeing that it would be impossible to slip past the battle outside turbolaser range, Leia swung the Falcon around behind the usurper fleet and watched in horror and fascination as the combat grew larger and brighter. Within seconds, the inferno filled Han's side of the canopy entirely, flashing and boiling so brilliantly that it was impossible to see the planet behind it. Seal the hatches, Leia ordered. She rolled them up on their side, and the ship began to vibrate violently as the sticky vector plate caught again. A meter-wide shaft of blue fire stabbed past beneath the Falcon's belly. Then another shot by, just an arm's length above the canopy. She pushed the yoke forward and felt a catch about halfway. The Falcon began to buck, then abruptly stopped when a turbolaser bolt hit the stern with a deafening clang. Leia drew what she feared might be her last breath and turned to say goodbye to Han. Then felt the yoke obey and saw stars whirling in front of them. A flurry of turbolaser bolts stabbed past harmlessly, growing thinner and more distant, until they ceased altogether, and the sound of damage alarms filled the cockpit, which meant they still had air. Leia drew back the yoke again. It was a bit sluggish, but the Falcon had stopped vibrating, and she quickly brought the ship under control. Discovering that she was still looking at Han, she asked, "What happened?"
"Looks like a glancing strike to the starboard aft."
His voice was steady but determined, and his gaze was fixed on the control board.
"I don't think we even have the number 3 or 4 vector plates anymore. And maybe you'd better back off those throttles. We lost another coolant line."
Leia dutifully throttled back, then realized the turbolaser attacks had stopped. "Han, that's not what I mean. We're still alive." Han finally looked up, smirking at the surprise in her voice.
"Sure we are. You're a Jedi, remember?"
"Very funny," Leia replied. "But true. We just might survive this thing." Of course, that was when the proximity alarm blared to life again. Ribbons of color danced across space ahead. Then blue halos began to wink into existence and swell into the backlit forms of an oncoming fleet.
"Another one?" Han gasped. "What is this, a war?"
Aboard the rover, near Hapes.
On the journey back from Terrafond, the rover had managed to beat the Ducha to Hapes by shaving safety margins and pushing hard between jumps. But Ben was still bringing up the comm systems when the Galney fleet slid out of hyperspace behind them and began to accelerate toward the battle. At this distance, the conflict was little more than a smudge of radiance flickering against the planet's jewel-colored face. But Ben could feel it tearing at him inside, could feel all those lives fluttering out. It reminded him of why he had tried to hide from the Force when he was younger, of the constant sensation of anguish that was all he remembered about the war with the Yuuzhan Vong. Except now, Ben was older. He knew it was not the Force causing all that pain. It was people. He knew that people could be selfish and frightened and noble and brave. And when all those things got mixed up together, wars got started. That was why the galaxy needed someone like Jason to straighten things out so there wouldn't be so much suffering. The comm system finally completed its post-jump diagnostics, and Ben started to set it to Tenel Ka's command channel.
"Jedi Skywalker," Ioli snapped.
She turned her noseless face toward Ben.
"What are you doing?"
His hand hovered above the input pad.
"If Tenel Ka lets the Ducha come in behind her..."
"The lieutenant knows what will happen, son," said Tenogo, the chief petty officer who operated the snoop station behind Ben. "She asked what you were doing."
Ben glanced over his shoulder at the huge-headed Bith.
"Opening a comm channel?"
"With the enemy so close we can read the names on the sides of their ships?"
Tenogo riffled his cheek folds.
"We wouldn't last 10 seconds.
"But we've got to warn Tenel Ka."
Ben turned back to Ioli.
"And we're not going to reach her before the Ducha does." "Can't you do something with the Force?" Ioli asked.
Ben shook his head.
"It wouldn't be specific enough. She'd know there was danger, and she might even sense I meant there was treachery. But it's still just a feeling. And in the middle of battle..." "She'll be feeling those concerns anyway."
Ioli let her breath buzz out, then said,
"Very well. But we'll do this with a voice recording, and bear in mind we'll be sending it over the hailing channel."
Ben frowned.
"I don't understand."
"We have to be sure it gets to her," Tenogo said from behind Ben. "And since the traitors may still have someone close to the Queen Mother intercepting messages..."
"We want everyone to hear the warning,"
Ben said, nodding.
"It's the recording part I don't get. Why can't I just..." "Jedi Skywalker, do you really expect me to explain my orders?"
Ioli demanded.
"Tenel Ka is running out of time, so make your report brief and to the point."
Ben cringed, more from the anger in her presence than the sharpness in her voice.
"Okay, sorry."
He opened a recording file, then spoke into the comm microphone.
This is Jedi Ben Skywalker with an urgent warning for the Hapen Royal Navy. Ducha Galni is a verified traitor coming to launch a sneak attack on the Queen Mother. Repeat, urgent warning. Ducha Galni is a traitor. Take all precautions.
Ben finished and looked over for Ioli's approval, but found her returning the intercom microphone to its cradle. She hooked a thumb toward the rear of the skiff.
The others are getting ready to go EV. Join them. Copy.
Still stinging from the last time he'd questioned Ioli's orders, Ben unbuckled his crash webbing and rose, then realized what she intended to do, and stopped between their seats.
Wait a minute. We have 6 people and only 4 suits. You think I don't know that?
She asked.
Yes, no,
he said.
I know you do, but there has to be another way.
She looked at him with an expression that seemed more impatient than hopeful.
You have one?
Unable to think while he was looking into her eyes, Ben let his gaze drop to the deck. Both she and the chief seemed so calm and focused, but he could feel their fear in his own stomach, a fluttering ball of force energy that made him want to throw up. When Ben did not answer quickly, Ioli said,
I didn't think so.
She checked the chrono on the control panel.
The chief says I need to send your message in 2 minutes and 12 seconds to give the Queen Mother a fighting chance. It's going to take you 3 to put on that suit. What about a message beacon?
Great idea, Tanoko said, if recon skiffs carried message beacons.
Go, Ben, Ioli pointed aft. And that's an order. I can't just leave you to die,
Ben said, remaining where he was.
I'm a Jedi. You're going to be a dead Jedi, because I'm going to send this report in exactly...
Ioli checked the chrono again.
1 minute and 52 seconds.
Tanoko grabbed Ben's arm.
We're scouts, son. This sort of thing goes with the shoulder patch.
He pulled Ben out of the cockpit and pushed him aft.
Go on now. We'll swing back and pick you up, if we don't get vaped.
Aboard the Anakin Solo, near Hapes.
In the command salon holo display, it all looked so neat and orderly. The planet Hapes loomed at the back of the projection, a bulging wall of light with dull green islands scattered across basic blue ocean. The battle itself was an arrow-headed column of blue, friendly symbols driving through a block of red hostiles. The friendlies were trying to reach an amorphous mass, identified in blue as the Hapen Royal Navy, that was swarming a pair of avoid symbols designated unknown. A reinforcing fleet, labeled Galni, was racing in from the periphery of the Hapen gravity well, its designator colors changing from friendly blue to hostile red as it traveled. But Jason knew what the battle was really like. He could feel it in the hundreds of life presences winking out every second, and the waves of anguish rolling through the force ever more powerfully. Most of all, he could sense it in Tenel Ka, in the carefully controlled anger he perceived when he reached out to her, in the fear and sadness she felt over the outcome. A subtle pressure in the force drew Jason's attention to his aide, Orlop. He turned to find the Jeannette just looking up from the datapad in his hands. Yes? Jason asked. Orlop's big snout twitched uneasily. It always disconcerted him to be anticipated. But Jason didn't care. Orlop was monitoring 2 crucial situations on his datapad, and he had orders to interrupt immediately if the status of either changed. When Orlop took too long to compose his thoughts, Jason snatched the datapad from his hands. I can't wait all day, Lieutenant. Jason's eyes went first to the image of his cabin, where Alana sat on the floor playing with a pair of simple rag dolls. Scattered around her was a GAG Special Assault Squad, with orders to kill anyone attempting to enter the room. Only then, once he was sure that his daughter was safe, did Jason read the message on the lower part of the display. What's this about Alliance rescue beacons, Lieutenant?
The signal deck started to pick them up as soon as we reverted, sir. They're about here.
Orlop extended a finger into the holo display, indicating a position on the far side of Galni's reinforcement fleet. But Jason's mind had wandered again.
his gaze drifting back to the fight above Hapes.
Colonel?
Orloff flicked his finger, drawing Jason's attention back to the question of the rescue beacons, which were located squarely on the opposite side of the Galney reinforcement fleet from the Anakin Solo.
I was debating whether to bother you with this at all, since any rescue vessel we dispatch will probably be destroyed. To retrieve the stranded personnel, we'd have to divert the entire fleet.
Obviously. Jason continued to study the hologram, wondering what could have caused an Alliance crew to go EV so far from the main battle. Any idea who...
Colonel Solo.
The interruption came from Major Espara, the pale-skinned woman Tenel Ka had sent along to serve as a liaison officer to the Royal Battle Dragons and his task force.
I hope you're not even going to consider diverting this fleet to rescue a handful of your people. The Queen Mother is already in danger, and if you allow Ducha Galney's reinforcements...
I assure you my understanding of the Queen Mother's danger is far clearer than yours, Jason replied rather sharply. He returned his attention to Orlop. Have the signals deck place a tracking lock on the beacons. We'll attend to them after the Queen Mother is safe. Orlop punched a button on his datapad, sending an order that he had obviously prepared in anticipation of Jason's decision. When the Jeannette did not look away, Jason asked, Is there something else, Lieutenant?
There is,
Orlop replied.
The message dinghy you dispatched to Roku Depot was waiting to be taken aboard when we reverted from hyperspace.
Jason frowned. And?
And the hangar chief is suspicious, Colonel,
Orlop said.
The pilot is requesting an immediate audience with you, and there's some question as to how she could have known our reversion coordinates.
Commend the chief on his caution, Jason said, and tell him to get that pilot up here now. For someone like Lumaya, foreseeing the Anakin's reversion coordinates would have required only a little guesswork and some force meditation. Jason was far more surprised that she had returned at all, since he had felt nothing in the Force to suggest that either Luke or Mara had been killed. In the holo display, the Galney fleet began to glow more brightly as the Anakin Solo closed to within range of its new long-distance turbo lasers. The usurper reinforcements continued toward Hapes at maximum acceleration, clearly convinced they could reach the battle and kill Tenel Ka before Jason's task force caught up to them. Jason used the Force to depress a button on the wall, activating an intercom microphone. Commander Twizzle, time to grab their attention. Attack at your discretion. Twizzle's voice came over the speaker.
Very good, Colonel.
A few moments later, the Anakin's long-range turbolaser batteries unleashed a salvo, causing the lights to flicker and the ventilation fans to slow. A moment after the first volley, one of the Galney battle dragons started to flash with damage. The lights in the command salon flickered again, and then the vessel vanished from the holo display. Apparently, the Anakin had caught the target with her shield still balanced forward. Well done, Jason said. He turned to Espara. Would you give the Queen Mother's battle dragons clearance to open fire as soon as they're within range?
Of course, Colonel.
Several Galney battle dragons were flashing with damage, and there were holes in the formation where two more had already been destroyed. It was far more damage than the Anakin could do with three long-range turbo laser batteries. Jason turned to Espara. I didn't know the Queen Mother's battle dragons had been equipped with long-range turbo lasers. Espara granted him a rare smile.
I'm sorry, Colonel. Admiral Pellion was kind enough to share the technology after the Queen Mother assigned two fleets to the Galactic Alliance. The Royal High Commander instructed me to reveal the upgrade only on a need-to-know basis.
I see. Jason was irritated, but not surprised. Even among allies, secrets were not shared easily. The rear elements of Galney's reinforcement fleet were splitting off to meet the Anakin Solo and her task force. Galney ships were already pouring clouds of starfighters into space, trying to set up a defensive screen so the leading elements of the traitor fleet could continue to attack on Tenel Ka. Jason's task force began to decelerate and spread out, preparing to launch its own starfighters and take advantage of their long-range turbo lasers to soften up the enemy before fully engaging.
Colonel Solo, we can't stop the fight, Espara said. She pointed at Tenel Ka's small flotilla. The Queen Mother will be pinned against the planetary shields.
I see that, Major. Jason knew better than to suggest Tennel Kaa could retreat planetside. There were too many enemy vessels nearby. If she had the planetary shields lowered, they would simply follow her through and take out the generator stations.
Are you suggesting a breakthrough attempt?
Aspara nodded.
We have no choice. If we slow down to fight here, by the time we reach the Queen Mother, she'll be in an escape pod trying to dodge Mytils.
Aspara was right, and Jason knew it. Even with half the Galney fleet hanging back to fight his task force, the Queen Mother's flotilla would still be outnumbered, nearly 3-1. What Aspara did not know was that any breakthrough attempt would also put at risk the life of the consortium's Chumda, Alana, and Jason felt certain Tennel Kaa would not want that any more than he did. Aspara frowned.
Colonel Solo, you're wasting valuable—
Jason silenced her with a raised hand.
Thinking is not a waste of time.
He activated the intercom microphone.
Commander Twizzle, how many battle dragons would be required to have a reasonable chance of breaking through that screen? And bear in mind they'll need to have enough strength left to continue pursuit.
Twizzle's answer came immediately.
It would be better to send us all. That's our best chance.
I didn't ask for our best chance, Jason countered. I need a reasonable chance.
Twizzle was silent for an instant, then said,
18, sir. Berta believes that strength would give the task force a 63% chance of disrupting the Galney attack on the Queen Mother.
Then that's what we'll do, Captain, Jason said. Berta was the Anakin's tactical computer, a powerful mainframe operated by a squad of Bith programmers.
Have the other two battle dragons stand off with the Anakin.
Stand off? Aspara echoed. Colonel Solo, a 63% chance of saving Queen Mother's life is not good enough. You may be too much of a coward to send in the Anakin, but I assure you, every hapen—
That's quite enough, Major. Jason made a pinching motion with his fingers, and Aspara was suddenly too busy gasping for breath to continue speaking. Her accusation stung more than he cared to admit, in part because it was so true, at least when it came to Alana. When Jason continued to hold his force choke, Aspara's gasping changed to a desperate gurgling, and her hands rose to her throat. Jason turned back to Aspara.
Your dedication is commendable, Major, but there are facets of the situation that you're unaware of, and I am doing exactly as the Queen Mother would wish. Is that clear?
Aspara nodded.
I'm glad we understand each other.
Jason released his force choke and allowed her to gulp down a long breath, then turned back to the holo display. The 18 battle dragons he had dispatched to save Tennel Kaa were already closing on Galney's defensive screen. Clouds of starfighters were pouring into space between them, and vessels on both sides were already blinking and starting to fall out of formation. The Anakin Solo and its two escorts were concentrating their fire along one flank, trying to help open a hole through the screen. But the usurpers adjusted quickly, sliding a fresh vessel into place each time an old one was destroyed, compressing their formation as their attackers drew closer. The pursuit detail was already down to 14 battle dragons, and a third of those were blinking with various degrees of damage. Jason felt Orlop's attention.
The pilot you asked to see has arrived.
Good, Jason said. We'll need a few moments of privacy. Happy to escape Jason's presence, Aspara and her aides left immediately, followed closely by his own staff. Only Orlop lingered. Is there something else, Lieutenant?
There is,
Orlop said.
You probably don't need to be concerned, but we may not need to send anyone after those rescue beacons we detected. The signals deck reports a private transport headed their way.
Good. Have signals track the vessel, and we'll make contact after the battle.
Very good, sir.
Orlop flipped the data pad up under his wrist and turned toward the exit.
I'll send the pilot in now.
Thank you. Orlop departed. A moment later, a slender woman in a black flight suit appeared in the doorway, her face concealed behind a closed helmet visor. Jason immediately had the sense that something was wrong. Not dangerous, but not what he had expected either. For a moment he thought the cause might be his own feelings. Perhaps he was merely nervous about meeting Lumaya after he had tried to set her up at Roku Depot. Or perhaps his real fear was that she had prevailed after all,
that Luke and Mara were dead. Then Jason noticed how much taller and more slender this pilot was than Lumaya, how bulky her helmet was and back, how one shoulder sagged. He let his hand drop to his lightsaber. "That's far enough until I see your face." The pilot stopped, and a dark flutter of amusement rippled unevenly through the Force. Leaving one hand to hang useless at her side, she reached up with the other and released the neck ring.
"You mustn't kill us."
Even modulated through a helmet speaker, her voice sounded silky and half-familiar, and it definitely did not belong to Lumaya.
"We have news of your master."
"My master?"
"Your Sith master, Lumaya."
The helmet rose, revealing a once beguiling face that had gone hard and sharp. "Surely you're curious about what became of her at Roku Depot."
A pillar of fire rose inside Jason. Alima Rar had been a Gorog joiner, a member of the Killik nest that had tried to kill his daughter as a newborn. And now here she was, aboard the same ship as Alana. Before he knew it, Jason had ignited his lightsaber and grabbed her in the Force. Alima allowed him to draw her closer, her eyes gleaming with unbalanced delight.
"You would do it," she snickered. "You would kill us without a thought."
Startled by the truth in her words, Jason released her.
"Without hesitation," he corrected. "But I have been thinking about it. I've thought about it a lot." "That is nice to know, Jason. We have been thinking about you, too."
"And that still sends a creep down my back," Jason replied. "Now, since I really doubt you came here to fulfill a death wish, why don't you tell me about Lumaya?" Alima raised one thin eyebrow.
"You don't deny she is your master?"
Jason shrugged. "I doubt there would be much use in it." He glanced at the holo display, where his pursuit detail was just crashing into the screen of Galni ships, then added, "And I'm kind of in the middle of something, as you can see." Alima's gaze went from the holo display to his lightsaber, and she retreated a step.
"Go ahead and kill us, then. You should. We're the only ones who know Alana's heritage. Aside from you and Tenel Ka, of course."
Jason's hatred welled up inside him again. Or perhaps this time it was alarm. "I've never liked threats," Jason warned. "These days, I don't tolerate them at all."
"Then it is a good thing we were not making a threat,"
Alima replied coolly.
"We were making a suggestion. Gorok tried to kill your daughter. We are all that remains of Gorok. You should kill us."
"And have gossip vids claiming that I'm Alana's father start popping up all over the consortium?"
"Did we say that would happen?"
Alima asked innocently.
"We are concerned with higher purposes, Jason. We serve the balance."
Jason knew better than to believe her. He considered killing the Twi'lek, thinking it might be better for the secret of Alana's paternity to come out now, while the consortium was already in such disarray. But that decision was not his to make, at least not while Tenel Ka was still alive. He glanced at the holo display and saw that the issue of the Queen Mother's survival remained undecided. Jason deactivated his lightsaber and turned back to Alima. "As tempting as I find your invitation, I prefer to let you live now. Tell me what happened at Roku." Alima's face relaxed, and she said simply,
"We failed."
"We?" Jason asked. "Who is we? You? You and the Killix? You and..."
"Lumaya,"
Alima said.
"We have been working with her for some time."
The Twi'lek risked taking one step closer, then went on to explain how she had stumbled across Trissina Lobi spying on Ben in Fellowship Plaza, and how she had helped Lumaya kill her. After that, Lumaya had agreed they should work together. Alima had gone on to assassinate several members of the Bothan True Victory Party, then boarded the Anakin Solo with Lumaya and accompanied her to Roku Depot to attack the Skywalkers. "Wait," Jason said.
Lumaya knew they would be there? Of course. She knew the best way for you to deal with their suspicions was to betray her and send her to fight them. Your master was very proud of you, Jason. By betraying her, you prove that you have the strength to fulfill your destiny.
I don't know which I find harder to believe, Jason scoffed. That Lumaya would work with you, or that she would be proud of me for setting her up.
Believe both,
Alima retorted. You said Lumaya knew she was being set up to fight the Skywalkers?
Of course,
Alima said.
Lumaya was a Sith, after all.
And she went, and still got killed? Alima nodded.
She knew that killing your uncle was the best way to ensure your success. But she couldn't be certain of her victory, so she wore a proton detonator on her chest. When her heartbeat stopped, the detonator exploded. We are sorry.
You saw her die? Alima shook her head.
We're still here, are we not? But Lumaya couldn't have survived. The entire cantina was destroyed. Even your aunt and uncle escaped by only 2 minutes.
The Twi'lek paused for a moment, then added,
That's why we came back. To warn you that they'll be returning to Hapes as soon as they make repairs.
Repairs? Alima's eyes twinkled mischievously.
The Jade Shadow suffered a mysterious rupture of a containment line, she said. The repairs won't be simple.
And you arranged this because...
Because you needed time to prepare,
Alima said.
The Skywalkers know that you set them up too.
Jason frowned. He was growing increasingly troubled by Alima's story, though only because he sensed that she was telling the truth, at least as she knew it. His plan had been to use the Skywalkers' own fears against them by making it appear that Lumaya had been following Ben. Clearly, something had gone wrong.
What about Ben? Jason asked.
For the first time, Alima looked confused.
Ben?
Did he survive the explosion? Alima frowned.
Ben was never there, she said. That's how the Skywalkers know you betrayed them.
Jason's stomach sank. If Ben had never made the rendezvous, naturally the Skywalkers would have believed Roku Depot was a trap.
But then where had Ben gone?
The sinking feeling in Jason's stomach grew cold, and he turned back to the holo display. The rescue flotilla, or rather the 8 Battle Dragon designators still blinking on the holo display, had finally broken through. They would soon be in full pursuit of the Galny force moving against Tenel Ka. But Jason's gaze went to a position on the far side of the battered defensive screen, where a blinking transport symbol labeled Long Shot was gliding toward the tiny blue blips of 4 Alliance rescue beacons.
What is so interesting there?
Alima asked, following his gaze. Instead of answering, Jason oriented himself toward the real physical rescue beacons, then reached out in the force and sensed 4 presences, 3 of them familiar. They seemed healthy, though perhaps a little impatient, frightened, and at least in Jaina's case, angry. Jason didn't bother even trying to guess why the 3 Jedi had returned the rover to Hapes instead of obeying their orders to rendezvous at Roku Depot, or how they had gotten themselves blasted out of their skiff. He simply flooded his presence with reassurance and tried to project that to them, so they would know help was on the way. Zek and Ben responded by projecting feelings of gratitude toward him. Jaina simply shut down.
Isn't the Long Shot one of the Falcon's false transponder codes?
Alima asked. Jason turned and found her frowning at the Long Shot's designator symbol. It might be. If Alima noticed the suspicion and hostility in his tone, she ignored it.
Do you think that is a good idea?
Do I think what is a good idea? Jason asked.
Allowing your parents to take your apprentice hostage, she said.
Don't try that on me, Alima, Jason said, scowling. I know how the Dark Nest worked, remember?
How could we forget?
Alima turned to him, the hatred in her eyes now open and honest.
We would never try to use our powers on you, Jason, You have already proved that you are too powerful and smart for us.
Just so we understand each other, Jason waved her toward the door. My parents are going to help Ben and the others, not take them hostage.
If that's what you believe, then we're sure we are wrong,
Alima said. She used the Force to retrieve her helmet, then turned to the door.
Perhaps we should be going, if you are going to permit us to leave.
Jason nodded. Lieutenant Orlop will arrange an escort for you. His hands ached to kill the Twi'lek, but he did not dare. Not while he suspected it would expose the secret of Alana's paternity. You may consider the message dinghy a gift from the Galactic Alliance. Alima lifted her brow in surprise.
Thank you.
But if my relationship to Alana is ever exposed, I'll hunt you down myself.
Have no fear, Colonel Solo,
Alima said.
Your secret is safe with us. We know it is the only reason we are leaving here alive.
The Twi'lek lowered the visor and went out the door. Jason activated the intercom and asked Orlop to arrange an escort for her. Jason went to the holo display, where the 6 surviving battle dragons of his rescue flotilla were in full pursuit of the Galni attackers. The remains of the defensive screen, 7 rapidly blinking battle dragons, and a like number of Nova cruisers were gathering to give chase. But Jason had anticipated that possibility and had a plan to stop them. Tenel Ka's small force was already laying fire on the leading elements of the Galni fleet, and he thought it more likely than not that the Queen Mother would survive. Jason's gaze shifted to the tiny blue blips that represented Ben's and Jaina's and Zek's rescue beacons. The Longshot's designator was only a couple of centimeters away from them now. He knew Alima had been trying to make him doubt his parents' intentions, but she was gone, and those doubts remained. There were too many unanswered questions about his parents' role in the attempt on Tenel Ka's life, and the intelligence they had provided had been more harmful than useful. The fact was, Jason had begun to question his parents' motives before Alima ever boarded the Anakin. When he returned from Relifon to find Tenel Ka already under attack. Of course, he knew that the great Han and Leia Solo were capable of playing double agents. He had simply refused to believe they would participate in a cold-blooded assassination attempt against a friend. Lumaya had been right. Jason had put loyalty to family above his mission. He had balked at the necessary sacrifices. And that hesitation had nearly cost Alana her mother, and Hapes, a queen mother, had come close to costing the Alliance one of her most important member states, and maybe even the war. Jason motioned Orlop and the others back into the salon, then activated the intercom. Commander Twizzle, the time has come to smash the usurpers. Order the Anakin and her escorts to advance and engage. We need to wipe those Galni battle dragons off the tail of our rescue flotilla.
Very good, sir.
Twizzle's voice was happy.
And nicely done, if I may say so.
You may, Commander, Jason said. And I have one other order. Have one of our long-range batteries target the long shot. There was a moment of silence. Then Twizzle said,
But, Colonel, the long shot is a false transponder code. The transport is really...
Stop wasting time, Jason said. I'd like the vessel destroyed before it reaches those rescue beacons. There was a moment of stunned silence. Then Twizzle said,
Colonel Solo, the long shot is almost on them now.
I understand the risks, Commander. Assign our best gunnery team and fire away.
Aboard the Millennium Falcon.
The airlock had almost finished equalizing when a boom like a meteor strike resonated through the Falcon's hull. The corridor dropped away, and Han hit the ceiling, or rather it hit him. An instant later he found himself plastered to the deck, with no memory of leaving the ceiling. Han rolled to his side and lay there suffering, trying to sort out what had happened. Then a scrap of flimsoplast tumbled past, bouncing along the deck past Han's nose. The cabin pressure was dropping.
Han scrambled to his feet, then stepped over to the control panel next to the airlock and silenced the emergency alarm. Leia's voice came over the ship intercom instantly, backed by a chorus of chimes and buzzers that suggested the Falcon systems were sinking faster than a comet down a black hole.
Han, you okay?
Yeah, so far. But I can't waste time talking about it. We've got a pressure leak somewhere.
A leak?
C-3PO asked, also speaking over the intercom from the cockpit.
Captain Solo, you only have one functional arm. You'll never be able to...
I'll handle it.
Han peeked through the hatch viewport and was relieved to see that Jaina and her companions were all on their feet and steady.
I've got help in the airlock.
Just watch yourselves, Leia warned. The deck continued to tilt and buck as Leia put the Falcon through a series of evasive maneuvers. Some laser brain in a Star Destroyer is taking pot shots at us.
Is that all?
Han asked. Seeing that the airlock pressure was almost within normal safety margins, he hit the safety override.
I thought you'd hit an asteroid or something.
A warning light flashed inside the airlock chamber, and the hatch hissed open a moment later. Jaina and the others, Zek, Ben, and a Twi'lek stranger emerged in the typical post-EV rush to free themselves of their claustrophobia-inducing emergency suits, pulling off gloves and opening closure rings. Once Jaina's visor was raised, she turned to Han and opened the bulky arms of her evac suit to embrace him.
I don't know what you're doing here, but whatever it is...
I love you too, kid,
Han said, raising a hand to stop her.
But the hugs will have to wait. We've got a pressure leak.
Jaina's eyes dropped to the sling hanging in front of Han's chest, and her expression switched from relief to understanding.
How bad have we been hit?
Don't know yet,
Han said. He turned back to the control panel and tapped the keypad, calling up a ship-wide damage report.
But it can't be that bad.
Jaina pointed to the damage schematic on the control panel display screen, and Han's heart dropped into his gut. The upper cannon turret was gone, along with a substantial portion of the surrounding hull armor, and the lower turret was spread open like a flower blossom, clearly blown apart from the inside. The access tunnel that connected them was red, indicating a total pressure loss, and the surrounding compartments were quickly shading to pink. Jaina must have sensed Han's shock, because she asked,
Cockmame and Meewaw were in the turrets?
Yeah, firing the laser cannons.
Han's insides were nodding with sorrow. Given the damage he had seen in the schematic, the only thing left of the two Nogri were the places they would always hold in the Solo's hearts.
I owe whoever's commanding that Star Destroyer a detonite sandwich.
A Star Destroyer fired on you?
Ben asked.
What did you do to deserve that?
Saved you, Han said sourly. We can always throw you back if you think it was a bad idea.
We'll take care of Ben later.
Jaina took Han's arm and started forward. Right now we need to get you and Mom into evac suits.
Evac suits? No way.
Han started aft.
By then the Falcon won't have any cabin pressure left.
Dad, you took a turbo laser strike straight down your access core.
Jaina waddled up beside him in her suit.
We might not be able to patch things up.
Sure we will, Han replied. This is a YT-1300. The access core isn't that important.
He continued aft, bouncing off the walls as the corridor tipped and tilted around him. A deepening shudder in the deck hinted at a broken engine mount, while a steady serenade of muffled groans suggested how fiercely the Falcon's damaged frame was straining under Leia's evasive maneuvers, and made Han wonder how long they had before a metallic bang deep inside the ship somewhere brought that final ear pop of decompression. He rounded the corner to find the bulkhead hatch sealed and a stream of air whistling out through a tiny hole in the wall. The edges of the hole were smooth and puffy, as though the Durasteel had been melted instead of punctured.
That's bad news,
Ben commented from a couple of meters behind Han.
It's a spatter breach.
No big deal, Han said.
Spatter breaches happened when a metal mass erupted in a molten spray, usually after being hit by a turbo laser strike. They were notoriously dangerous and difficult to repair because they caused so much damage in so many different places.
It didn't hit anything important, or we'd be dead already.
Han activated the control panel, then checked the pressure on the other side of the bulkhead and entered a safety override code. His ears popped painfully as the hatch retracted, and the whistle of escaping atmosphere became a scream. He stepped into the rear hold and turned toward the sound, and the first problem became instantly apparent. The spatter had perforated a meter-wide circle of Durasteel with literally hundreds of tiny melt holes. The metal was so weak that the air pressure was bowing the wall outward, and Han knew it wouldn't be long before the area simply tore free and sucked the atmosphere from the hold in a deadly whoosh.
Okay, so it's kind of a big deal, he said. Jaina, you and Zek go to the repair locker and break out the patches and reinforcement strips. Ben, take your Twi'lek friend and...
We're not really friends, Ben interrupted, sounding as petulant as only young teenagers could at a time like this. And his name is Spacer First Class Sorzo.
Fine. Han looked over Ben to the Twi'lek. Just take a look around the access core and see if there are any other spots this bad.
The Twi'lek Sorzo acknowledged the order with a salute and started off with Ben in tow. Han spent the next 20 seconds searching the immediate area for less obvious punctures and finding plenty. Even if they did manage to patch this cluster, they would still have to track down dozens of tiny melt holes concealed behind places like the engineering station and medbay. It was going to mean sealing off the cockpit and spending hours in evac suits. But what else could he do? Abandon the Falcon? A tremendous bang rumbled up from somewhere below decks, and an odd chugging sensation began to accompany the ship's shuddering and bucking. Leia's voice came over the intercom, barely audible above the screech of escaping air.
Han, what was that?
How should I know?
Han was actually beginning to feel overwhelmed by the Falcon's problems, and that never happened.
Can't C-3PO tell you?
There's no indication of a new problem on the damage report. But we do seem to be losing power in our sublight drives.
Blast!
Han started to bang a fist against the wall, then took another look at the circle of spatter perforations and decided not to risk it.
Something must be pinching a feed line.
Perhaps you could free it.
I'm kind of busy patching pressure leaks back here, Han responded.
That won't matter if we take another hit, Leia said. And if we can't maneuver...
We're gonna take another hit. Han finished. I know, okay? Let me get a flow report and see if I can locate the problem.
He stepped around the corner and found Ben already standing in front of the aft engineering station, eyes glued to the display and fingers on the keypad. Han rushed to his side. The screen had nothing on it but a tactical display feed, which showed a confused but improving situation near the planet Hapes. Admiral Bois-2's fleet was already starting to hammer the Corellian dreadnoughts, and a task force of Royal Battle Dragons was tearing through the second usurper fleet from behind. With the Royal Battle Dragons was an Imperial-class Star Destroyer, with a designator symbol reading Unknown. While the vessel was directing most of her fire toward the usurpers, she had dedicated a single long-range turbolaser battery to attacking the Falcon.
I thought I told you to look for pressure leaks, Han said. I'm still captain of this tub, and that means you do what I say.
I'm using my own best judgment, Ben retorted. He put a finger on the display, indicating the mysterious Star Destroyer. And it tells me we're in big trouble. Our only chance of surviving is to make for that Star Destroyer.
Are you crazy? Han asked. She's already firing on us.
Only because you're trying to escape, Ben countered. She'll stop firing if you surrender. That's the Anakin Solo.
Han's jaw dropped.
The Anakin what?
The Anakin Solo, Ben said proudly. Jason's ship.
Jason's ship?
Han actually stumbled back, and not just because the deck had tipped again. He felt like a bantha had kicked him in the gut.
They named a GAG Star Destroyer for my dead boy?
Well, yeah,
Ben said, clearly confused.
Anakin was a really great Jedi.
I can't believe it.
Afraid he would lash out at Ben in his fury, Han turned and kicked the wall so hard he felt his toes pop.
The cripping rotters!
Ben cringed and began to back away.
It's an honor. Jason said...
Forget what Jason said, Jaina interrupted, returning with Zek and the patching supplies.
He's living in his own galaxy these days.
Ben frowned.
But Admiral Nyethal thought it was a good idea, too.
Then Admiral Nyethal is one dumb fish.
Han snatched the reinforcement strips from Zek's arm and nodded him toward the engineering station.
I think we've got a pinched fuel feed. See if you can clear it before the engines shut down and we turn into a target barge.
Without waiting for a reply,
Han stepped around the corner. The pressure had fallen far enough now that the air was beginning to cool as it expanded. They had less than 3 minutes until the atmosphere grew so thin that breathing would become difficult. He dropped the strips on the floor in front of the spatter perforations, then turned one over and tried in vain to scratch off the flimsoplast backing.
"Uncle Han, surrendering is our best chance of surviving,"
Ben said, following.
"All I have to do is calm Jason and tell him I'm bringing you in."
"So he can torture his parents like his other Corellian prisoners?"
Jaina demanded.
"They're better off taking their chances in the Falcon."
"But we're not,"
Ben countered.
"We're not traitors to the Alliance. At least I'm not."
"I'll forget you said that. Because if I don't, we're both going to regret it."
Jaina removed the strips backing in one smooth pull.
"Be careful how you apply this, or you'll just create more suction. Dad will show you."
She held the strip up for Ben and reached for another, but he was shaking his head and ignoring her.
"No, not until Uncle Han promises to..."
The strip fluttered past Ben and plastered itself into the middle of the spatter perforations. The scream of escaping atmosphere grew shrill and urgent, and a crease shot across the damaged area. Han's heart climbed into his throat.
Jaina!
"Oh, crap!"
She jumped up, already peeling the backing off another reinforcement strip.
"Ben, what's wrong with you?"
"Nothing. I'm just doing my duty."
Ben snapped his lightsaber off his evac suit's utility loop.
"If we help make repairs, they're just going to escape.
And if we don't, we're all going to be sucking a vacuum in about 30 seconds.
Holding the reinforcement strip in two hands, Jaina stepped toward the wall, then suddenly stopped when Ben ignited his lightsaber. Her jaw dropped, and she looked up and said,
"Please tell me you didn't just pull your lightsaber on me."
"I'm sorry, Jaina,"
Ben said.
"But you don't have any discipline. Like Jason says, you're always making up your own orders instead of following the ones you're given."
Jaina glared at Ben for an instant, then thrust the reinforcement strip at Han.
"Hold this!"
Ben retreated a step, bringing his blade up behind his rear shoulder.
"Jaina, don't make me...
Ben's threat came to a surprised end as Zek slipped around the corner and caught hold of his hands from behind, twisting his wrist forward and forcing the lightsaber blade down toward the deck. And that was when the shockwave of a nearby turbo laser strike slammed the Falcon. The deck jumped so hard that Han's knees buckled and he came down on his wounded shoulder again. Cries of astonishment rang out all around and his body exploded into pain.
"How's that feed line repair coming?"
Leia asked over the intercom. The air was so thin now that her voice was starting to sound tiny and faint.
"If I can't accelerate, the flight is only going to get bumpier."
"Just keep us pointed out of here."
As Han spoke, he realized that someone nearby was groaning in terrible pain.
"We'll pass out of range sometime."
He rolled to his knees and saw Zek curled on the deck, his hands clutched to a blackened slash in the side of his evac suit. Ben was kneeling next to him with a look of horror on his face, still holding an ignited lightsaber and shaking his head in despair.
"You shouldn't have grabbed me,"
he said.
"Why'd you have to grab me, Zek?"
"Because you were acting like a Jedi wannabe,"
Jaina said, coming up behind him.
"Give me that."
She snatched the lightsaber from Ben's hand. He looked up at her.
"It wasn't my fault."
"Then whose fault was it, Laser Brain?"
She switched the lightsaber off.
"I just hope you haven't killed us all. Now grow up! Go help your uncle, and I'll..."
"No, Jaina."
Han stuck a handful of reinforcement strips into his sling and turned to the damaged area.
"You've got to get Zek and Ben out of here."
"Out of here?"
Jaina asked.
"Get into the escape pods."
Without removing the strip backing, he held it up to the edge of the perforation circle and allowed the vacuum to suck it into place.
"Zek needs medical help. And I really don't want you sticking us with a brat."
"But what about..."
"The Falcon's only carrying a 4-person pod capacity right now," Han interrupted. "And even if we had more, Leia and I are not surrendering."
He shot a look at Ben that could have melted Frasium, then added,
"Not to Jason or anyone else."
He held another strip to the edge of the circle and let the vacuum suck it into place. It would be a temporary patch at best, but it might hold long enough to save them. He placed another strip, then looked back to find Jaina kneeling beside Zek. She had the fingers of one hand pressed to his throat, taking his pulse. but her eyes were fixed on Han, and there were tears running down her cheeks. She nodded, then chinned a toggle switch in her collar, and spoke into the microphone of her suit's comm unit.
Sorzo, get back here. We're abandoning ship again.
Good. Han had never been more proud of his daughter.